Welcome to Run, Build, Grow, the podcast that laces up its running shoes and dives deep into the heartbeat of the communal spirit of running. I'm your host, Andrew Ware, and I am thrilled to take you on this exhilarating journey where we are exploring stories that go beyond the pavement. Here at the top of the podcast, I would love to encourage you to support this podcast, support the Run and Rev Network, help me continue to grow as we share these stories of community here in Hampton Roads, in Virginia, and even all across the country and world. I'd love you to begin by supporting by heading on over to your favorite podcasting app, whatever you're listening to this on. Make sure you follow or subscribe to this podcast. You can also go and find it on runbuildgrow.com. While you're online, if you would head over Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you can leave ratings, you can leave reviews for Spotify. You can leave just a note on an episode and say how much you love that episode. For Apple Podcasts, you can leave a review on the podcast itself. And so please help out and leave a rating and review over there. Help this podcast to grow and see how much you are loving it. And on that note, I do have two reviews. So one comes from Spotify, and we got Dat Frenchie coming back in with another review for the last episode with James Moore. He's had another solid ad from the Run and Rev. Really dig the community of running that he finds and presents weekly. Every finish is an individual record, but born out of a much larger community. Thank you so much, Chris. What a great shout. Thank you so much. And then we also have one from Christian Chavez, and that name might sound familiar to some of those, and that is because, as he will say here in this review, I just want to read it. Hi, just listen to the Mike Couch episode. I'm Christian. It was an awesome episode, and hearing Mike's thoughts on the race and his experience guiding me for those last 14 miles. Virginia Beach and its community are amazing. Best marathon trip I've been on. That race wasn't a PR attempt, but it was a race I needed for my 55-mile race in May. The race is a big part of that goal, and everyone who helped me at Virginia Beach, thank you. So thank you, Mike. Thank you, Christian, for tuning in and letting us know. Those are our reviews, but also you can support by leaving your own review, and then even you can support by sharing this podcast with your run community to help this community grow, to help other people hear the podcast. And lastly, I'd love it if you had it within yourself to help to support me financially. I do have over on buymeacoffee.com/runandrev. You can drop a tip if you really love an episode or you really love this episode, drop a tip over there, or you can become a member with a monthly donation. And if you do either one of those things, you will get a shout out in the next episode. And so I would be so eternally grateful for you to help me just, you know, keep the lights on, keep things going, help me to continue to tell these stories. And so without any further ado, all that out of the way, in this episode, we welcome Nakia Young. Nakia is the president of the Richmond Roadrunners Club in Richmond, Virginia. And what a great and an awesome opportunity for me to sit down with her and really gain some knowledge and understanding, not just about Richmond, but about her personal endeavors in the running community and the way that her community and the community that she has built up, surrounded herself, gotten involved in, the way that they are doing things to help bring awareness to different areas. And so you will hear her. She has just a laundry list of things that she does and ways that she is involved. And so I'm so excited for this conversation. So let's jump in and hear from Nakia. All right. Welcome in, everybody, listeners. Today, I am joined by Nakia Young. Now, this is great because I met Nakia at the Shamrock Expo back on Shamrock weekend. It was the first time we met. And immediately I was like, I have got to get her on the podcast ASAP. And so I was glad that she was able to get in really quickly. So, Nakia, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm coming off of Cherry Blossom weekend, which is a lot of fun. Had a fun meetup there with the Game Changers, which I'm excited to talk about. But yeah, doing pretty good. We're recording this on the day of the eclipse. I'm hoping that that's a big turnover energy. Huh. So yeah.
Oh, man. And so, yeah, this is great because, you know, my first introduction to Nakia at the Shamrock Expo, you know, we were just talking and chatting, and I guess a mutual friend of ours, Candace, was there, and we started talking about the Richmond running scene. Of course, listeners, you know that I moved down here to Hampton Roads from Richmond. And so I just love to be able to get back to my roots and talk to some folks up there. And so Nakia and I connected. But Nakia, before we get started, where we love to start this podcast is to hear a little bit more about you. So what is your community? And again, we just define it as broadly as you want. What is your community and what makes it awesome?
There are so many different communities that I'm actually a part of. And when I reflected on that question, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like when you think about it, I'm kind of lucky where I started running in that time and frame where like ambassadors started to come across. And like, so like I have a blended community of not only where I currently live, which is the Richmond Roadrunners Club scene, but you got City Stadium Runners is a team I love to run with. I run with the Sports Backers Half Marathon Training Team. I actually coach the walking team that we just built out in the last year or so. And then I have a virtual community of runners that not only I run with, but I coach. So I'm an RCA certified array coach on top of everything else that I do. And so that virtual community is so neat because, you know, as you start to travel and go to different places, you finally get to meet people in person. And so like I've got a group of folks that I'm going to go see out in California for the Orange County Marathon. This past weekend at Cherry Blossom, got to meet people that I've known for 4 years now and finally got to meet in person. So it's a nice blend. I'm very lucky to have like that virtual piece and that in-person piece. And then also just being able to be supported in that way too.
And so you kind of talk about the broadness of community. And so before we kind of dive into a lot of these different sort of iterations of community that you're involved in, I want to hear a little bit about Nakia the runner. So can we back us up to maybe the beginning of your running journey and what that looked like? And even so, because I can't imagine that your involvement in community does not stem from the impact that community bringing you in had. And so can we go back to Nakia, the first time show up at something, or what was the beginning roots of your journey as a runner?
Yeah, so it's actually a really fun story. I went to college out in Salem, Virginia, Roanoke College, and I am part of a sorority, and I'm still very much involved with the sorority. And my sorority sisters are super active, just like some of us are super active and some of us were not. And we were just so lucky to like have each other in that space. But a couple of them were running the Blue Ridge Marathon, which is infamous and famous. And, you know, we're standing at the finish line, waiting for our girlfriends to come back through. We're cheering. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do this one day. Now, mind you, at this time, I probably couldn't walk a mile well. I was in college. And so, you know, I roll into like the summer before my senior year. I'm staying on campus because I'm working. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just start like running on the track. We're just going to start doing the thing. I've always been active, but I'd never been like runner focus. And we found like a color run that was happening in Henrico. Didn't realize at the time Henrico basically is Richmond. And so ended up training for a 5K. A couple sorority sisters came with me and we did the color run and it was so much fun. And then I started to pick up a couple other 5Ks done by like the Mountain Junkies out in Roanoke when I was finished on my senior year. And then when I moved to Richmond and people were talking about this 10K thing, and I'm thinking like, well, like a 5K, like a 10K is like double a 5K. Like, oh, that sounds a little, much. And then, you know, as you fold into the Richmond running scene, you find out that like, oh, like this is everybody's like gateway drug into distance running. And I trained with a really neat YMCA training team. They were so supportive. I was never left alone, even though I was in the back. But, you know, consistently was like, oh, you are putting forth the effort. You are here every week. Like, we're going to be here too. And so, you know, even then, looking back, I'm like, oh, my God, the impact a coach had. And several years later, I was running a 10K. I was working running a turkey trot. And I saw one of the coaches that was like, oh, you'll be fine. I was like, I'm still running. And he's like, oh my God, I'm so professional. And, you know, just one of those like, hey, kind of slow and fun stories. But yeah, it was, I got in kind of on a whim and stuck with it is really what it looks like.
And so you had a lot of folks who were kind of bringing you along. And I love this sort of connection to college, you know, Greek life, so to say, because while I was not in Greek life when I was in college, I was not in a fraternity. I think we can definitely look at Greek life in colleges and see sort of the connection that builds and everything that happens in there. And so to kind of hear that that's where it began and that's where it really started to kind of kick off. So what other sort of support have you gotten from those original, you know, sorority sisters as you've grown in this journey?
Yeah. So, I mean, I get cheered along regularly. People reach out. One of my favorite things that happens is, like, if people hear that I'm coming to a place, because I, you know, I'm trying to do the 50 states like everybody else, they're all over, right? Sisters live everywhere. And so I've had the couple reach out and be like, hey, like, let me know when you're in New York. Like, we're gonna, like, I'll be on the course. Or, like, I even have stayed with sisters and outside of, like, even folks I went to college with, because I am involved more on that, like, national space. So even, yeah, oh, I'm gonna be there. I'm gonna be in this part of town. Like, please come stay with me. You know, so definitely, like, has saved me a little bit in traveling about. And I mean, even one friend had me cracking up because I was like, oh, like, I'm going to Cincinnati and I'm pretty sure Sophie lives there. And, like, I ended up running the Queen Bee out in Cincinnati and the Flying Pig. And both times, you know, I called, like, when I get everything booked, I'm like, hey, Sophie, I'm coming out. I'd love to block off at least, like, half a day to see you before the race or after. Like, let's hang out. And so it kind of has been, like, not only traveling, but also kind of reconnecting with folks that maybe you haven't seen in a couple years either.
So when you're going around and you're receiving this support, I think there's a lot to be said that when a running journey begins or when a running journey is fostered from that kind of support, it really then kind of works its way back to the support that you offer. And I mean, it might not be the same for all different types of personalities. From meeting you, you seem like a very outgoing personality, but I can imagine that support that you receive. How much about your current journey, and we'll get to that in a minute, but how much about your current journey of being supportive, of being there for athletes that you coach or being there for fellow members of your run club? I mean, I'm guessing you're attributing that a lot to what you experienced in the early part. How are you trying to emulate sort of those experiences that you got early on as you're now fostering this love for this sport in other people?
Yeah, so I will say a lot, like, some of my experiences were not positive. And so I wanted to flip that energy back and provide that space that maybe I did not have. You know, not everybody's welcoming to a slower runner in general. And I've gotten slower over the years. It's so funny because people assume, like, oh, you'll keep getting faster, you'll keep getting faster. That's not always necessarily the case,
no,
regardless of injury, what have you. But I will say, like, being able to flip those experiences and be like, oh, or seeing where there's a gap, not necessarily be like, oh, this wasn't there for me, so I'm mad about it, but more be like, hey, I just noticed that we are missing a sweeper at the end of our race events. Let's start having that. Like, you know, like, but what is the impact of someone that's traveling to an event? Not, you know, they might not know the area. They just signed them for something on a whim. We want to make sure we're supporting that. So I'm trying to not only, like, you know, collect and hold on and then push back out all the positive, but also see how we can continue to enhance that experience. Specifically, what a lot of my focus right now is the novice or back of the pack runner, or the runner that's coming back from maybe an injury or some time off. Those are my, like, key core folks right now. Because, you know, even with the half marathon walking team, what's funny about the walking team is there are people on the walking team that walk faster than I run. And I mean, like, they're speedy. They walk a 13-minute pace. They look like they're, like, out on the beach. They're having a good time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you do realize that they are very fast. And just by changing the word, oh, we're a half marathon team, and by saying, oh, we're a half marathon walking team, now they feel comfortable enough to be there. Whereas they could have beat the time limit before, right? But it was that. The intentionality of the word walking that made them feel welcome enough to then sign up and then show up.
Well, and I mean, it's just a huge thing in the running community that we be able to create a space where a lot of folks can feel welcome. And, you know, it's one of the things that I often talk about down here with, like, a lot of the JNA races is, you know, be the person who goes and drops a 16-minute 5K, but also recognize that there are people out there who are doing a 5K in 60, 70 minutes.
Right.
And we recognize that, like, both accomplishments are really great in their own right. And, you know, to see a lot of the folks, like, being there, you know, I know even for me, when I did my half marathon PR at Shamrock, now the
not this past one, but the one before that, you know, I still made sure and I wanted to be out there like cheering folks on as they were finishing. Because I mean, I did my half marathon. I still had to wait for the first marathon finishers to finish, let alone like some of the folks, you know, who are, you know, coming in. And it might be the first time they've done 13 miles, might be their first marathon. And I mean, those are just such awesome accomplishments to be able to celebrate alongside people, because that's kind of the space that we want to create. You know, it can be so easy to gatekeep an activity.
It's so stressful. It's not intentionally, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. I think a lot of times, because we work, like Richard Roadrunners Club also works with a lot of other running clubs. And then I'm also involved in the RCA, which is the Roadrunners Club of America. And, you know, some of those conversations that they have at the board meetings, it's just, oh, wait a minute. Like, are we potentially cutting off a population without realizing it? And that's why you bring, you know, those different perspectives to the table and, you know, ask your community like what they want, or trying to like figure that out, whether it's through like surveys or like focus groups, like try to figure out like, what do people want? And even just kind of having an open ear to the community, right? Because sometimes you get feedback and you're like, oh, that stung, but you're not wrong. So then you have to be like, okay, well, like, what can we logistically do that's not going to, you know, flame out volunteers as well? Because that's the hard part of the balance, is what can we do? And then what is realistic given, you know, whether it's, you know, a race location or time limits? Are we bound by what the files and all that stuff, you know, permits? What are we bound to? And then what can we negotiate?
Yeah. And to be able to create that space for folks to be able to experience it, I think it enhances even the experience for everybody throughout the field, whether you're front, middle, back, whether you are like sprinting or even walking. I mean, I can't tell you how much like appreciation we get from a lot of folks in our run club. Cause you know, we have this one guy who started showing up early on, and he is our walker. And he's just like, hey, who's walking? Like anybody who's walking. And now we got like a group of like five or six who walk. And we even have people ask like, oh, do you have anybody who like just wants to walk like 1 or 2 miles? I'm like, yes, we do. And you know, unintentionally you create things, and you're just like, there are things you don't even think about. And so let's start with Richmond Roadrunners. So I think a lot of listeners will be familiar, because I have had Chris on, and I've had a couple of other folks from Richmond who have come on, and you're one of the Richmond Roadrunners. You're the current president. What led to this involvement in Richmond Roadrunners? Was it completely and totally because you wanted to break through and make sure there was space created for people who are like you? Was it more of a, I felt like they needed somebody, and so I just stepped in? So what kind of went into beginning? Because being from Richmond, that's probably where a lot of this more like national stuff begins. And so what kind of led to your involvement with the Richmond Roadrunners?
So, you know, it's always fun, because I am a serial volunteer. I am a professional volunteer, you know, like I have a job, but I love to volunteer. So I still give back to my sorority. I still give back to the Red Club. There's all these different places in my life where I'm like, you know, while I have like the freedom, I currently don't have any children or a husband or anything. So like, while I have that freedom, I want to kind of put that energy back into these pieces and parts of the world, right? So I had been showing up to a couple of different races, you know, and you don't really realize, especially early in your running journey, you know, you just kind of like, oh, I looked up online and it said there was this race and this event, and you don't really understand all the organizational pieces. Like, you don't know the difference between Sports Backers and RRC. And so I signed up for a couple races. I kind of kept showing up, and then they're like, you know, if you sign up as a member, you can save some money. And I'm like, oh, great. You know, and at that time, like, I was fresh out of college and definitely needed to save money, but loved this whole like running idea. The races were cheap. And, you know, you keep showing up and people are like, hey, would you like to, you know, be a race director? And it's like, well, how hard could it be? When, you know, similar to the start of my running journey, like, oh, you know, I guess I could double it and run further. It's like, oh, okay, I know how to put on an event. I've done that before. And so, you know, started as a race director, was a race director for a couple events, even actually did some Girls on the Run 5Ks that I put on. And I'm now a board member on that board as well. And then, you know, just they started there, and then it was like, oh, we need a treasurer. And of course, like, I was at the time, I was a financial analyst. There's a very big difference between a financial analyst and a like CPA bookkeeper type, but we got through it because, you know, there's a lot going on at the time. We had over 22 races, you know, 4 different training teams, just, you know, money going, we're, you know, moving things around. So there's a lot of work there. And then when I was treasurer, the entire executive board, except for me, was rolling off. And I figured, you know, I've been involved. I know most of the aspects of the club. You know, not like I can go out there and do every single one of them, but I have a general knowledge about everything that's gone on. So I was like, I'll run for president. And then we pulled in a full new executive board. And that was December 2019. And I'm thinking, like, we're going to change the game. We're going to do all these cool things. It's going to be so great. And March hit. And we're having to cancel. I mean, spring used to be our big, you know, like, it's almost every other weekend we'd have an event. We got a winter maple going. There's so much happening. And I mean, we had to cancel. And at the time, the guidance had been like, don't have virtual events. And, you know, Virginia being as locked down as we were, we really couldn't even tell people to gather together to run together because it was like groups of 5 or less points of the lockdown. So, you know, you're thinking like, what do we even do? Like, are we paralyzed by fear? So once we got the clearance in like May, June, we were able to flip a lot of our races to be virtual. But of course, that's not what people wanted, right? Being present through that transition was a lot. And so I kind of took a big step back afterwards because I was just so flamed out from that, like 2020 to 2021. I was like, you know what? It's time. I need to take a step back. And that's where Rainey actually came in and kind of really bridged the gap in a lot of ways, took more of that nonprofit viewpoint. And then for me, she kind of created it to be more of a safe space for me to come back. So we've kind of been passing it back and forth, but I'm happy to be back now because I feel like we can take all of what we learned from the pandemic, what we learned from having Rainey's like nonprofit structure, and then seeing how we can kind of layer in some more continuity, because that's the hardest part, I think, with volunteer organizations, regardless of what like atmosphere of that organization it is in. We're seeing it across the board, you know, whether you're on a nonprofit board, whether you're on a working board, doesn't matter what the cause is, everybody's kind of struggling to either find volunteers or keep volunteers, because I think a lot of folks are just burned out. So wanting to make sure that we not only create a fun space where we're providing fun races and events and crews, but also making sure that we're taking care of our volunteers too, because until May, we will be completely volunteer run for the last, you know, 40 plus years. We are hiring our first executive director, which I really hope, I think, will help with that continuity and also further support that volunteer structure to do all the other things.
And it becomes such an important role and task to like be able to parse everything out to make sure all the needs are being met. I remember that time in 2019, I was part of Race Team RVA, and we definitely had a nice little fun time trying to figure everything out. That was right before I moved too in 2020. And so you're going through this process as race directing, as treasurer, you've been serving as president. And so what then becomes this catalyst for game changers? You talked about it a little bit for women of color and kind of breaking through in the running scene. And so you bring this experience of being a runner, you know, as you said, kind of being more of a back of the pack runner, but also being a runner who is not often well represented. Folks, remember my conversation with James, you know, there's literally a list of Black female runners who have run a marathon in under 3 hours. And it's like a celebrated achievement for Black women because so few have done it. So what becomes the catalyst for game changers? What becomes the catalyst to become a running coach?
So I think with game changers, what's cool about game changers? So in 2020, Vanessa, who is fantastic, and I should connect you with her because she is just a light in this community. She actually, by this community, I mean women of color. She actually is out of Philly, but she created a program called Game Changers. And the program basically provides access and equity so that there's more representation of women of color coaches in specifically the RCA space. What a lot of people might not know about RCA coaching is that while it is, you know, you can get classes, they're 2-day sessions, but it does have a cost. It's usually around $350. So that is sometimes a barrier to like front load that. And it also getting a spot in some of those classes is so hard. But you think you couldn't get into the New York City lottery, try being a certified parent coach through RCA. And I know that they're working on building out better access for that too, right? Like it's hard.
I'm only USATF certified because it is so hard to get into an RRCA program. And I definitely understand that side of it.
Which, because in my mind, you know, it's like, oh, I could have eventually paid the $350, but like trying to get into one of those classes was a fight. And so providing that availability and like blocking off a chunk of spots so that women of color could come and take the class, it makes a difference. Like sometimes it's not always monetary, right? I think when we think about access, we immediately always go to money. And money is important, and groups need money. I'm not going to say that you don't, because everything needs money, but sometimes it's literally just making the space like, hey, we need 18 people to go through this. Oh, okay. Let's block it off. Let's work with, you know, RCA. Let's work with Randy and the organization.
Yeah.
So what's really neat about this program is that it has multiple pieces, right? So not just getting the certification, but providing a way to get first aid certified, because you do need that as part of your certification. Well, you know, not everybody lives in a place like Richmond where, you know, you got 5 or 6 different options. You can roll into a Red Cross and get certified today. You know, some folks are a little further out. Some people, you know, so providing that, and then also providing mentorship and accountability partners. So what was really neat about this past weekend is that I actually got to meet my accountability partner. She lives out in Oklahoma. She's an Indigenous woman named Becky. And we were in like back and forth on Instagram and having a conversation since 2020. We are part of the original Game Changers group. And since then, we have built out and provided mentorship and support to over 108 women of color coaches in the last 4 years. That's incredible. Jeez. Like that is, and that's a significant statistic, right? Because I think a lot of people will say like, oh, there's coaches all over the place, right? But there is a difference for when you are certified. You've gone through the process. You likely have insurance. I was coaching long before I was a certified coach. And that's very common in Richmond, right? You know, we just have folks that are passionate and ready to support. And then sometimes having that knowledge to back you up can help you feel more secure in having those conversations with folks like, hey, not only have I experienced this, I'm also taking these classes, I've experienced this with other clients. And so having that to just support is great. And I mean, over 22 states are represented. It's really neat. So I'm excited to see how it grows. I currently mentor 2 women. I've been a mentor in the past as well. And I plan to mentor as long as I have the time and energy for it. Because, you know, there's not a lot of spaces to ask those questions, right? And you can get wrapped up in the internet and Instagram and TikTok and like, you know, these fast bits of like, you know, oh, well, you never do this. You should never do that. It's like, well, actually, it really depends on the athlete you're working with, because that's really what it's about, right? It's not necessarily one size fits all. And that's the beauty of running, right? Is that what works for me might not work for you and vice versa. But if we find what works for individuals, you want to grow old with this sport. Or at least I know I want to, and I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that sometimes it's nice to be able to bounce that question or bounce those questions and have them answered and be like, well, how did you set this up? And it's like, actually, I didn't plan to have those things set up. You know, I think a lot of times we look on social media, think, you know, we see people's highlight reel and we see their finished business. And we see their finished, you know, race program, and you're like, man, like I could never do that. And so for us as mentors, we kind of get to tell them that, like, hey, it was not all sunshine and roses. I actually had no intention of taking personal clients. But then I was like, you know what? There is a need. There is a need for folks that maybe they want to run coach, but they feel like it's not for them, or they want to run coach, but maybe they mostly use Peloton. Like there's a very interesting like subset of people that are entering the run space, not via run clubs or races, that they're connecting from other communities that are kind of in their own bubbles, which is really an interesting place to watch and see people like, oh, I bought a treadmill and now I'm out here doing, you know, 10Ks and half marathons and fulls even, you know, because I think a lot of people don't realize that not everybody has the the luxury of stepping outside their front door and then running however long the distance is, right?
Yeah.
There's even some parts of Richmond where I'm like, I would have to, if I lived here, I would have to drive to the nearest park and then I'd have to finesse my route. You know, people need childcare. People, you know, like different life situations call for different things. So I think remembering that community is not just what you see, but it's also all these other factors that are starting to fold in our more technological connection world.
And especially in a city like Richmond that has experienced and continues to experience the worst of racial oppression, right? You know, I mean, we can talk with, you know, James and hear all the stories of everything that's happened in Charlottesville, but I know definitely, I mean, lived in Richmond, you know, a lot of the racial kind of things are under the surface. They're not as visible as, you know, white nationalists marching through your town, but it's more of how the city is built. And so I think being able to be present in the community to show that this can happen, and even to the point of being able to create safe spaces for folks to be able to trust that things can happen. And so I want to kind of fast forward to where we are today when we're interviewing, of just coming off the back of the Cherry Blossom 10K or 10 miler. Because before we hopped on, you were talking about being up there with Game Changers. You talked about, you know, you said that you participated in the 5K, but that you had athletes in the 10 mile. And so, you know, covering it from both aspects of, you know, you are a part of this race and you're representing this brand that is trying to bust in to the running space to create space for women of color. But then also you are a coach for a lot of these women of color who are coming in and running in this space. So from both, so what did it mean for you to participate in the 5K sort of as an ambassador for this, for Game Changers? And then what did it mean for you to also be able to coach some of the women who are accomplishing the task of both the 5K and the 10 miler?
So I actually didn't coach anybody that was in the mid.
Oh, okay. I thought you said you had.
So they're also they're mentors. So I'm mentoring other coaches, which is a very neat spot. It's coaching the coaches, you know, coaches need coaches. I think a lot of people are saying like, once you become a coach, you're like, oh, I'm good to go. No,
nope.
No. Coaches probably need coaches more so than people that are just out here living the dream. But I will say, like, being there representing, and there was a really neat moment at the 5K. I couldn't make any of the meetups because I just was struggling to be time bound. But I got into the corral. We're talking to people. I had met up with someone else from Richmond who was not in the program, and she was like walking in her boot. I was like, you know what? I will walk with you. That is fine. I did my long run on Friday. So we had a conversation. We're standing in there. We're talking. And I turn and I look behind me because the corral was a little packed on the 5K situation. And I look and I'm looking in this woman's face and I'm like, I know you. As you know, and of course, like you gather all these faces and people over time. And like,
yeah,
cool. And I did a double take. And then the other woman that was standing with her goes, hey, you're the keeper, right? And she's like, you're a Game Changer. I was like, yes. Because I could not place them. Because, you know, everybody looks different when we've been meeting on Zoom screens for the last
year.
And then you turn, I kept turning. And then there's two more people. So another one's a Game Changer. She's also an ambassador for Cherry Blossom. And then you got Pray Love DC or Eat Run for ADC. And I'm like,
yeah,
girl, I haven't seen you since, you know, Richmond. And it's so funny because once again, I met most of these people virtually. I've not met many of these people in person. So it's just so funny to have like that presence of like, oh, people do know who I am, right? Like, and feeling comfortable in that. Because I think a lot of folks don't, either they're trying to like, oh, I'm just going to focus on the race. But then like having that, like, oh, that's just such a nice way to like start an event, right? Is, oh, like people, you know, people around you, you may not have started the race with, like, maybe like get past the start line with them. Be like, so good seeing you. Like, I'll see you at the panel. I'll see you at the thing. And so that connection was really kind of a nice way to like start that. And then seeing folks on the course being able to like point out and be like, hey, like, I'll see you in a couple minutes. Like, I'll see you at the finish. And it was just, it was a lot of really good energy. And I love meeting people in corrals. Like, I love having like little conversations with folks, but then like to be like, oh, this is a good way to reconnect with folks and see folks in person, which is, you know, so different.
And I mean, it's just so interesting how that connection almost happens just organically sometimes. How, you know, they shove us in these corrals with 5,000 people and we're able to kind of at some point in time meet two or three. And then even along the course, it's like, it's not shared trauma, but there's something that's shared about the journey. And to be able to gather together and to be able to do that and to be able to grow along the process with others around us. And so as you're looking out and you're kind of reflecting on both kind of where you've been and sort of even, you know, what happened this last week in a Cherry Blossom, you know, what's happened at Richmond and all these other races, you look towards mentoring, you know, what is that difficulty? What is that struggle? What are those things that you want so bad for them to be there as you continue in working in this space?
I personally will stand on this soapbox all day long. I want longer time limits. And I mean that in the nicest way possible. Now, also, it's always right there. I do recognize that you are at the limits of what the police allow you to do because the permits and the roads. I get it. I don't want people to, you know, I get that. I understand that. And I've actually been the guest to like help explain that because, right, people are like, you can leave the roads open all day. And I'm like, actually, like, here's the story and here's how much it costs. And you know, so but I would love for things to be more 18 to 20 minute time limit. And here's why. Mm-hmm. Not only because even though I've been running for 10 years now, I still hang out in that 17 to 18 minute pace, but also because I think that if people had more time, they would feel more willing to hop into an event. And, you know, mm-hmm. you always need that gateway event for some folks, right? Like, now, granted, it does not matter what race it is. I am going to be passed by a woman with a stroller and usually one to two children in it. I am going to be passed by a 75-year-old man in a pair of jeans. It's going to happen. And I'm like, it is impressive, which is one of those things where you're like, yeah. I want to one day. But, you know, I would love to see longer time limits on the longer events, right? You know, barring that it doesn't disrupt traffic and things like that. But I would love to see longer terms on some events because I think what happens is that when we think of that time limit, especially as like race organizers, people have a tendency to try to rush the end.
Mm-hmm.
We want to remember, we want to have the same experience and the same excitement for the front, right? Celebrating running excellence. I want to celebrate it. I love that people are fast and are out there winning. I also want to make sure that my folks in the back are also being supported, also have fuel, also have water. Also, you know, if you have this niche thing on the course, like, for example, like the Norfolk Harbor Lights Race, you know, oh, we have pie at this event. And they did like pie for the back. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes a difference because I think what a lot of folks, but when they look at pamphlets and stuff and they're like, oh, that looks like so much of a good, fun experience. But when your experience ends up not being what the pamphlet says, it kind of, it hurts you feeling you didn't get what you paid for. And then it also kind of scares you away from maybe even trying something else in your own local community if you traveled for something. So that is my one thing that I'm like, I would love to see us change more so. I would also love to see less fat phobia, like less focus on the runner body. What if people can't figure out, I'm a plus size Black woman. I am large and in charge, but I feel like, You know, even if it's just like being able to find fitness clothing that fits well and fits well consistently. Like, I think a lot of folks are like, well, just lose the weight. It's like, well, you need something to wear while you're on your way to losing the weight. Like, mm-hmm. there's so many pieces and, you know, it can get expensive. Like, we're lucky to have some of those like discount brands. But, you know, even just thinking about, oh, you sign up for a race. And the largest race shirt is like maybe a men's large.
Yeah.
What does that tell me about my belonging in this community, right? Or, you know, the sizing is terrible. But I feel like that's also I feel like everybody feels that way. Like, the size is bad. But, you know, making sure that like, oh, like, you know, maybe it does cost a couple extra dollars. But is that folding in more people? Because what's the best way to market an event, right? Is that the shirt that you provided gets worn again, maybe to another event, maybe to something else. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just remembering those things about belonging and remembering, like, you know, just because a body looks a certain way doesn't mean that it isn't capable, right? I'm so grateful that this body in its current form has carried me hundreds of miles, maybe over 1,000 at this point, you know, and this, the things that it does, I can lift, I can run, I can do all these things. And a lot of us are grateful for where we're at today because people don't know, you know, you're seeing what you're seeing today. You're not seeing the whole journey. So I think a lot of times people are quick to be like, oh, well, you'll get there. It's like, was there?
Yeah.
I am here. This is me today. And I'm going to love me today. And I'm going to continue to build and work and grow for tomorrow. But, you know, it's okay to love today and love where we're at today and not always be necessarily striving for what else, right? Because that can also flame us out from that runner mindset.
And again, it becomes a barrier. And I think what I want to see more than anything in this community is that we kind of get away from these barriers of what we think a runner should look like, of what we think a runner should act like. And I mean, walkers, like, y'all are runners. Like, I don't care. You're participating in the same events we're doing. You're doing the distance. It's taking you 2-3 times the time. Like, I cannot tell you how much respect I have for people who are doing marathons and it's taking them 7 or 8 hours. Like, you are on that course for so long, in enduring everything. And I mean, it's a testament to how much care is given, how big of a desire for you all wanting to be there, whether you want that to be your PR forever or you want to better it. Like, you're out there doing the thing. And, you know, I get irritated when people are like, oh, you know, you'll get faster, you'll get stronger. And I'm like, you know, for me, I have ways that I push myself. And yes, like, someday I'd love to run, you know, X in a half marathon or 10K. But I think that also, like you said, like, there's so much respect that needs to be put on being happy where you are and the progress that you do eventually make being made because it's something that you want to do, not because it's a pressure that someone else is putting on you. I think of how many folks are in that space of trying to make sure that folks feel welcome in their running spaces. And so I wonder, you know, I mean, you talk about, you know, making sure that from front to back, you know, we don't have, you know, quickest finish times. I don't know, like, you cannot run this race unless your 5K is slower than 25 minutes. You know, we don't have that. And again, like, there are other logistical things that go into those kinds of things. But are we even asking the questions of how are we making this space as inclusive as possible for anybody who wants to participate? Because we don't want to be the reason. And, like, you know, when I talked to John LaMagda at Rain, et cetera, and I've talked to Jeff at Lucky Road as well, it's, you know, when we think about the places where there can be gatekeeping, like, those are the most important places to make sure that things are inclusive. It's like, you know, we need to make sure that we're creating space for people to feel like they can participate in this activity, because whether they lose weight or not, like, I cannot tell you. I mean, I'm not skinny by any means. I'm also not, like, fat by any means. If you look at my BMI, I'm obese, but, like, you know, I carry a good bit of dad weight, and I've just gotten comfortable with, I mean, I had someone ask me, like, what's your racing weight? I'm like, well, I don't really know. Like, that's a malarkey thing. But it's like, I feel comfortable here. If I'm going for a big PR, yeah, I'll slim down, but only really because I'm running so much mileage and speed work. But also, I think the better question is, like, are you having fun? And what that looks like.
Like, joyful movement is literally, I mean, because, you know, maybe running, walking, whatever is, like, not for somebody, right? But I'm always like, look, find what gives you joy and then do that. And then, you know, and enjoy that movement. It doesn't have to be for anything, you know, because we all know, like, oh, we've gone out for a walk and been like, wow, I do feel better. You know, like, you go out and you take a Zumba class and you're like, you know what? I almost didn't do that, but that was a good time. And so I want people to really just fall into this, like, movement that feels good just for the sake of feeling good and having a good time. And, like, you know, that helps with all those health outcomes that people are so worried about on the internet about people and strangers that they don't know. But, you know, like, it's just, I feel like we have to bring the joy back to running. I think it's made a resurgence. I think racecations, I think run crews, I think running groups are helping with that. But realize, just remembering like, oh, this is supposed to be a hobby. This isn't supposed to like, I'm not supposed to tie my morality to this. You know, yeah. I'm supposed to be having a good time. Like, I'm not getting my, usually you're not getting your health insurance from this situation, or you're not, you don't need the prize money to feed your family. This is a hobby. And so I think, oh, we have to remember that piece of it too, right? It's like, we're supposed to have enjoy ourselves. And also you want it to be a long-term, or at least I know I want it to be a long-term thing, right? I want to be able to do this until I literally qualify for Boston by age alone. just living look, long.
That's what I say. I don't understand why I have to do all the work to meet a Boston qualifier. I feel like the Boston qualifier needs to do a little work as well. Like, I don't mind getting to a certain point, but at some point in time, we're going to need to meet in the middle.
We're going to have to meet in the middle. Like, and it's not happening with that fundraiser, because I know somebody in Richmond who has raised over $16,000, and I'm impressed. I'm very impressed. But that is literally someone's full-time. That's a full-time job. You're running a marathon and fundraising, full-time job. You are better than me.
No, I think this is a whole conversation that kind of leads us down the path of, what does the future of running look like? You know, I think when we look at the resurgence of the running boom in the 60s and 70s, you know, we see this hopeful optimism of just, you know, running being a pathway to quote unquote healthiness, but we don't see it as a way of living. And I think we're starting to see that kind of shift and transform. And as much grief as they get for doing it, when I interviewed Jerry and Amy, they talked about getting rid of prize money at Shamrock. And they talk about it being one of the best decisions because they could invest more money in the fun parts of the race. They could put money in the fun parts of the race, making sure that there was a lot of course support, that people are on the course with water stops or cheering, like, right, creating the run club alley, and then even putting a lot of money into their after parties where people can celebrate the fact that they did the thing and they crushed the thing. It doesn't matter where they finished. And so I wonder, as we move forward and as we look at the landscape of what running looks like, we talk about what it means to be more inclusive, creating wider finishing, not standards, but wider finishing openings for people to be able to take longer in races if that's their ability. We talk about the access to things, just the things that we need to run. Running is a simple sport. It does only need a good pair of running shoes, but at some point in time, the good pair of running shoes is only going to take you so far. And so you do need some of the other stuff to kind of continue the journey. And so how do we make that stuff accessible? So as you look at this landscape, and as you think about maybe where you're going in the future, not just with Game Changers, not just with Richmond Roadrunners, but as you think about going into the future and you think about these accessibility things, you talk about your hopes, you talk about dreams. What is the dream for Nakia? Who is Nakia? Who do you want Nakia to be on the run? And not necessarily like you're running races, but just like in the running space. Who do you see yourself being in this space?
You know, I think for me personally, I would love for people to see me not only as a like wealth of knowledge in the sport, and recognizing that doesn't necessarily mean like, it's because she won XYZ, right? I would hope my accolades are more tangible than that, right? My accolades would be that I left the running scene, whether it's Richmond, whether it's a national scene, better than I found it. That, you know, I think about like, what are they all saying in your eulogy? And maybe that's a very morbid thing to say, but like, you know, I want that to be like, hey, she wanted and fought for and tried to build out the process and the policies and all those things to try and better support that next generation of runners. And it doesn't necessarily need to be runners that look like me, right? Because for example, I feel like a lot of people have seen me and been like, okay, if she can do it, then I can do it. Like, and they're not barred, like, getting into, like, the inspiration, like, you know, that, because sometimes that can get a little icky. But I think that sometimes you don't realize what people need to see until they've seen it. So if about seeing me out there and being like, hey, I've done this, this is where I was at, being honest and open about my journey, and then that impacts someone else to either just give it a shot, just to try, I just want to leave this running space better than I found it. And not even saying that it's bad, right? Because who would stick around if it was that bad? Well, you know, leaving things better than I found them is really kind of the goal. And it's a running theme through my entire life, right? Is that I want to make sure not only are we making space for that next generation, but making it more enjoyable for that next generation, making it a space where people feel like, oh, they walk in and it's not a question. It's not, where did you come from? It's not, who did you support? It's, oh, they're here. And that's what I hope for the future.
Yeah. And I mean, you even talked like early on, like your beginning to run journey was not the best. Like you had some ups and downs. And I think that, you know, there's places for all of us to learn in that, like, okay, it doesn't need to be perfect, but I think we can always be striving to make it better than what it is. And so what that means for us as we move forward, I mean, I love just the visibility of everything. Like, we need to be out there. We need to be living. We need to be existing. We need to, like James said, we need to take up space and not be afraid to take up space. So, I mean, it sounds simple. And I mean, it kind of is, but it's also like incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, well, let's hit these end of podcast questions here. So Nikhil, what is your favorite race distance?
Oh, you know, the half marathon, absolutely. Because you can run your race and still party through the afternoon, get that early bedtime.
What is your favorite thing to eat post-run?
Oh, okay. So there's my bougie meal is steak frites. I love it. It just feels like it nourishes you. It gets everything back to you. But yeah, steak frites is the post like long run meal.
What is something interesting that has happened to you on a run?
Oh, there was one time when I was training for one of my marathons and I had left my neighborhood and I live in South Side of Richmond, Forest Hill. And I saw some guys that were doing like the sanitation work. They aren't normally out on Saturday, but they were out this day. And they saw me and they waved and they're like, yeah, good job, good job. And that day was one of those long days. And so I was out on like, I ended up on Grove Avenue.
Gosh.
Because it was a long day. So I had gone like across the river a little bit and into some neighborhoods. And they were there too. And they were like, well, you? I was like, yeah, it was me. And I'm like, are you okay? But it was just really nice. I will say, we're very lucky. Our sanitation workers in Richmond are very, very friendly.
All right. And then last question. Why should someone find and join their local run group for a run?
Oh, it will open up an entire world to you. Let me tell you, if someone had told me that most of my friends would end up being my parents' age, that, you know, that these people not only will run with you, they will cry with you, they will laugh with you, they will take you to the hospital when you need it. They will use their run store's trailer to move you from your first apartment to your first home. Thanks, Jeff and Desiree. The Lucky Road trailer has moved furniture to my house more than once. Oh, no. That kind of stuff, right? It's more than just I run with these people. Like they are weaved into the fabric of my life. And, you know, it's so funny because my mom's like, you know, I always, she prays over her children. She prays over all of us. And she's like, you know, one of the things I prayed for sending you to Richmond was that you'd have support and you'd have a support system. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I probably couldn't have paid for a better one. So clearly the prayers worked because they you know, they're there. And it doesn't matter how long between you see people. They, you know, when you do catch them at that event or you see them again and like, hey, what you doing next? Da-da-da. You know, it's so different. And I know that, you know, everybody's like, my running club is the best. But I will say Richmond's running community has come a long way, even in the last 10 years. Okay. And I'm excited to see where it heads for the next 10.
And I mean, I think that is a wish that just about any community has is, you know, It's interesting having moved from, you know, Richmond to Hampton Roads and having left Hampton Roads, you know, I grew up in Hampton Roads, I grew up in JB. And so I often talk like the Hampton Roads I left is not the Hampton Roads I came back to. And the Hampton Roads I came back to had such a great space. But then you also have Richmond who like really just refostered this whole love of running just because of the people around there who created the space. And so, you know, I love that sentiment because you never know where this journey is going to lead. But I think when we start to look at it now, like, we hope that the answer is that when they come and they join us, they will see a place that they know it's going to lead to something great. So, well, Nakia, thank you so much for joining. I mean, and this is probably not going to be the last conversation we have. I do not think so. I think we're going to have to get you back probably after Richmond and have a lot more conversation. But Nakia, it's been great having you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining. And remember, make every mile count.